Here's Bill Meyer.
And good morning to you. We're really glad you're here this morning, live and local, in the Charter Business Studios. Charter Business is AAA BizBundle to bundle your business, internet, telephone, television, and save with Charter Business. A number of days ago, we had Gary Lake, a former Karuk Tribe Council member, in studio, and he was discussing the KBRA water issues, fish issues, and the battle that Siskiyou County and others are mounting against the KBRA and the plan to take dams out. And he raised some serious issues. Craig Tucker called up the other day and said, hey, you know, I'd like to continue this conversation. We're glad to have him here. Craig Tucker, you are a Klamath coordinator for the Karuk Tribe. Craig, welcome to the program, first off.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
All right. Now, Craig, tell us a little bit about what you do for the Karuk Tribe.
Well, I'm a policy advocate for the Karuk Tribe, and for the past 5 years or so, my key role has been working through the relicensing of the Klamath dams, which has led to a settlement agreement between the owner of those dams, the Karuk Tribe, about four dozen other parties, including the irrigators on the Klamath Irrigation Project.
All right.
And we think it settles sort of a long-standing dispute over dams and water use in the basin.
Now, Steve Kandra, you are a farmer on the basin, too. Can you tell us a little bit about you? Thank you.
You bet. My family's enjoyed its 100th year of what I call irrigated agriculture in the Klamath Irrigation Project. And I farm both near Merrill in Oregon and near Tule Lake in Siskiyou County.
All right, very good. And you are in favor of this agreement, much like Craig, then, correct?
You bet. The farmers within the irrigation project have what I would call suffered much uncertainty, what I call for water supply. Considerable what I call escalation of costs regarding electrical energy, and of course what I call regulatory uncertainty. And the restoration agreements and are a vehicle for us to resolve the issues that have been plaguing my communities for a couple of decades.
All right. How do we take, maybe if I could ask you both, whoever wants to handle this, Craig and Steve, there's a limited amount of water which comes down here. I am by no means an expert on KBRA. I'm not a stakeholder. I haven't been in all of your meetings and such. I've read some of the KBRA that I ended up getting a copy of. It, of course, made my eyes glaze over, okay? And I'm sure it makes your eyes glaze over at times, too. But how do you keep everybody whole that is currently up in the basin? Because this is all about, it's about fish and it's about economic vitality. What happens if these dams go out, first off? So, Craig, maybe I'll toss it to you first.
Well, I think it's important to understand that the issue of the dams and the issue of water deliveries are two totally separate issues. The dams that we hope to remove provide no irrigation diversions to anyone. The majority of the water storage, overwhelming majority of the water storage in the Klamath outside the Trinity Basin, is in Upper Klamath Lake. Upper Klamath Lake stores somewhere between 500 and 600,000 acre-feet of water. What we have behind the dams is about 11,000 feet of active water storage, 11,000 acre-feet of active water storage. So in terms of water storage, the dams, it's almost inconsequential relative to Upper Klamath Lake. So they're two really separate issues.
And would you agree with that, Steve?
Well, it's interesting you use the term keep everybody whole because in the current situation, the status quo, nobody is whole. And so it kind of you want to come back and revisit that. My particular community has suffered nine what I call water restrictions not to meet our demand in the last decade. And we're looking for a way to what I call stabilize that situation. And part of it, and a big part of that is dealing with, in a realistic and pragmatic manner, the fisheries resources. I think everybody's kidding themselves if they don't just accept the fact that the fishery resources in the Klamath Basin are at risk, and there are things that we can do about it. We know what those things are, and we need to get on with it. And when we start dealing with those fisheries at risk and making the improvements that we can make, we make everybody's situation much, much better.
All right. Let's focus here on Gary Lake is here, by the way, also, gentlemen. He lives in the area, or at least was able to come in here, because you had problems with some information that he brought up or claims that he made the other day on the program. Is that fair enough to say, Craig?
Yes.
All right. And Gary, first off, I'll introduce you, reintroduce you again, and tell us a little bit about yourself for folks who may have missed the first interview.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Craig. My name is Gary Lake. I am a past Cutter councilman for the Cutter tribe, of course, and I was a vice chairman for the Shasta people for 5 years.
Okay, so Gary made some interesting claims the other day, Craig, about the coho salmon. What is a native fish over in the river? And so we're going to look at the fisheries issue first, okay, before we get on to the irrigation aspect of things, because you say they are two separate issues, correct?
Well, I was just saying that the water delivery to irrigators really has nothing to do with the dams that we're trying to remove. The dams we're trying to remove do not provide any irrigation diversions to anyone.
But they do provide hydroelectric power.
That is correct.
All right. The other aspect, though, is that part of the reason for removing the dam is about restoring fisheries, correct?
That's true.
Okay, so it's
From our perspective.
From your perspective.
For others, removing the dams is a way to achieve the cheapest power rates possible. If you're a ratepayer for PacifiCorp, PacifiCorp tells us, what the Public Utility Commissions of California and Oregon tell us, is that to get a new license to operate the dams will cost ratepayers much more than what we proposed in our dam removal agreement. And it's the difference of paying over $500 million to relicense dams versus paying $200 million to remove them.
But paying the $500 million for relicensing dams has to do more with dealing with politics more than the actual cost of the dams and or fish ladders. Isn't that the case? I mean, and there's lawsuits involved. You guys would go right back into court with them if that were the case. Is that not true?
I think there's court battles ahead of us no matter which direction we go right now.
Hey, that's something that all of us on the air agree with you right now. I don't think it's over at all. I'll agree.
But, the federal agency that oversees the relicensing of dams and power plants is called FERC, the Federal Energy Relicensing Commission. And FERC's review of PacifiCorp's relicensing application concludes that if they have to fulfill the mandatory requirements of upgrading the dams for safety, upgrading the dams for water quality, and upgrading the dams for fish passage, the dams would operate at a $20 million a year annual deficit. So it's kind of like having a car that won't pass the smog test. You can invest a bunch of money in it and try to upgrade an old car, or at some point, you're just better off having a new car. You'll save money.
What about Gary's claim? Gary, earlier this week, or it was last week, I think maybe you were on, I forget.
Right,
last week.
The
days just fly by. You made a claim about the Karuk tribe when you were a member of the council, and I was hoping for Craig to respond to that since he's now, you know, connected with that. And maybe, Steve, if you can join in, sure, about the coho salmon as a native species.
Well, the statement I believe that I made was everybody knows that the coho salmon is not indigenous to the Klamath River, especially, the Shasta people know this. And I made a claim that we were approached by the Department of Natural Resources people from there to turn it into the new spotted owl and run, I believe I said, the white man, the Shastas, and the miners off the river. So that might be something that Mr. Tucker might want to respond to.
Now, Mr. Tucker, Craig, that was before your tenure. You've only been with the Karuk for, 5 years, I guess, is what you said?
Yeah, so it was before I was around, but I did dig up the council meeting notes that Mr. Lake referred to. And the words white man, Shasta, and spotted owl appear nowhere in these notes. In fact, the director of natural resources at the time, Sandy Tripp, told the council that the National Marine Fisheries Service had scientific evidence that coho were native to the Klamath Basin. And indeed, the Karuk language has a word for coho salmon that's thousands of years old. Both California Department of Fish and Game and the National Marine Fisheries Service have published papers describing the historic presence of coho. And I've never heard anyone who's a fisheries biologist who's studied fisheries make the claim or the assertion that coho are native to the Klamath. It's a pretty well-established fact.
Native up to the Klamath Lake?
No. Folks think that the historic range of coho was probably up to around Jenny Creek and Spencer Creek.
Uh-huh.
These are tributaries upstream of Iron Gate Dam. but people do not think Coho made it as far as Klamath Lake.
Well, I've never seen any science that you speak of that substantiates that. And going back, I mean, the whole tribal council, the minutes you speak of are minutes that was at one tribal council meeting. And Mr. Tucker, you were not there during all of the closed session meetings and the hours and hours and hours and days and weeks of discussion about whether or not we should even entertain the thought of pretending the Coho were indigenous to the Klamath River.
Well, show me one fisheries biologist who believes what you say is true, and show me one peer-reviewed publication that says it, because I can show you peer-reviewed publications from fisheries journals that clearly show that Coho are native to the Klamath Basin.
Well, I'm not a scientist by any means, and you know, you're way outranked me in that area, but Dr. Gierak and Dr. Menke and several other people that oppose dam removal, they all know for a fact that the Coho salmon weren't indigenous.
Well, you know, Gierak's a chiropractor and Menke is a rangeland ecologist. Neither one of those guys are fisheries biologists.
Well, I think that you would probably want to discuss that with them. They have extensive backgrounds within their area of expertise.
I guess what I would ask Craig and Steve, how many people, of all the people that are affected by what goes on with this agreement, how many were actually involved? Or, I mean, what percentage? I guess it's called stakeholders. That's the term. Were the people downstream involved in this agreement, given that it affects them so much? Craig or Steve, could you address that?
Well, I think we had early on about 30 different organizations, and it was tribes, county governments, state and federal agencies.
Because from what I understand, only Humboldt County has signed on to this, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, Humboldt County has signed the agreement. Klamath County, Oregon signed the agreement. Siskiyou County was a part of the negotiations the whole time.
What about the Shasta tribe? Was the Shasta tribe involved in this?
They were not.
They were not? Oh, okay.
I think we need to visit what I call the genesis of who was involved in stakeholders.
The genocide?
This all began with people, what I would call, taking the initiative at the time of first FERC licensing to intervene in the process, and so it's kind of self-actuating. The stakeholders that were involved had an interest and recognized they had an interest and petitioned to be stakeholders in the FERC process, and so that's the basis for folks being it. Folks that basically are claiming not to have been included. They always had the opportunity during what I would call that solicitation for stakeholders to intervene, and they did not.
Okay. All I'm saying is that from my view, from being here in the Rogue Valley, I'm looking at the way the process seems to have been, and it just looks like it was a predetermined solution to this to this problem. The dams are going to come out, and then agriculture, or at least many agricultural folks and fish and tribes and other individuals farther down. I mean, we get into Scott Valley, California, and all the rest of them are basically being told to, you know, pretty much dry up and go away. That's the way it looks
it doesn't affect Scott Valley at all. There's nothing we've done in this agreement that has any effect on Scott Valley except to make sure folks' power rates in Scott Valley is the lowest rate possible. It doesn't affect anybody's water right, water use, or agricultural practices in Scott Valley. They're just not affected.
I would like to respond to Steve's remark with regards to the stakeholders. The Shasta people were never invited to be part of this process, and over 50% of the Klamath River, including all four dams slated for removal, are within Shasta Nation territory, the Shasta Aboriginal Ancestor territory. And this KBRAA and KHSA agreement splits the entire Shasta fishing rights area between two interloping tribes. I was at one of those meetings, Craig, as a vice chairman of the Shasta people. We showed up because it was held in right there near just outside of Fort Jones, not too far away from there. And the bottom line is in the heart of Shasta territory in Scott Valley. And we were told that we had to sit in a talking circle and that we could not respond negatively to any of the things that were being stated. And the bottom line is that unless you agreed 100%, whatever that Manju or whatever his name was with the pirate shirt on, we were unable to talk.
As far as what I call invitation, when the FERC process began, anybody who wanted to intervene in the process, it's part of the FERC process. People had to stand up and say, "I have an interest," and so
and we did.
And you know, that's the invitation, and
we were there.
There's 30 of us that queued up and said, "We have an interest, and we would like to be in part of the conversation."
All right, we're going to have to take a quick break here, Jen. Oh, yeah, go ahead and finish that thought, then, and I have to take a break, and we'll be right back. Okay.
The agreement explicitly states that in no way are any tribal water or fishing rights affected by the implementation of these agreements. So no tribe is getting a fishing right taken away or given to them through these agreements, and that's explicitly stated in the agreements.
So, well, then why is it that there is a language, and correct me if I'm wrong, Craig, where somewhere near I-5, the Klamath tribe and the Karuk tribe are splitting? What is that language?
The Karuk tribe, it has nothing to do with the Karuk. The Klamath tribes of Oregon is the only tribe in the Klamath Basin that has a congressionally ratified treaty with the United States. And that congressionally ratified treaty with the United States recognizes their right to fish for salmon. They have not fished for salmon for 100 years because of the dams. So the agreement establishes an in-lieu fishing site, an in-lieu temporary fishing site, for Klamath tribal members to come and harvest fish between the I-5 bridge and Iron Gate Dam.
And it's interesting that the Shasta people are the ones that let the Klamath come down and fish in their territory. You know, it's a pretty interesting scenario that's going on with all this stuff, Craig.
Well, that's between the Shastas and the Klamaths. It has nothing to do with us.
Oh, yes, it does. You're a stakeholder.
All right. Well, anyway, we'll be right back and continue the conversation. We also want to get some listener calls in here, too. The phone lines are filled, and we will do this here in just a moment. Once again, Craig Tucker, Klamath coordinator for the Karuk tribe. We also have Steve Canberra, who is a farmer on the basin here, like we had just mentioned. Over 100 years, his family has been there. And Gary Lake of the Shasta tribe. 831 on KMED. KMED. We're talking about the KBRA, water, dams, fisheries, the whole, and boy, it is just really tough to make heads or tails of it, but we're doing our best here. Craig Tucker is back. He's the Klamath coordinator for the Karuk tribe, and Steve Kandra, a farmer. Gary Lake is also in studio here. We had him on last week about this, and I believe here our first call we're going to go to is John. You used to work for the tribe as an executive director. Is this John Martinez?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, you had a question here for Steve, Craig, Gary. I mean, anyway, just go right ahead.
Well, it's kind of a question for all three of the gentlemen. I when I worked for the Karuk tribe, it was common knowledge that the chairman at that time and the vice chairman and folks who worked in the Department of Natural Resources, who were behind most of the destruction of the economic underpinnings of Siskiyou County and the region, referred to white folks and the European economic settlements as the white devil. And given that, how do you reconcile that ideology with any form of true science that we could look at objectively?
That's a good question, John. Steve, Craig?
Well, this is Steve. You know, there's a time when folks in the neighborhood got to make an effort to get along. You know, we can spend all of history digging around and what I call playing to those fears and distrust. Or we can work together as a community to work at solutions. So it depends on what kind of baggage you want to carry. I and my constituents choose to work with entities that want to work with us. The Karuk people have shown a willingness to work with us, to be flexible, to provide some give and take, and that's what I know. And
does that include falsifying the evidence and historical documentation and the complete destruction of Siskiyou County as well?
You know, I think what's been falsified?
Yeah, that's Craig Tucker, by the way.
Pretty much
been falsified. I mean, there's pictures of.
Okay, hold on just a second. Go ahead, Craig. Finish the question, then I'll let John respond. Okay.
Well, it's like these allegations that fish that were never upriver these dams. There's photographs of both Indians and non-Indians catching fish in the upper basin. All the science we produce, we expect to have to be defended in a court of law, because we know how we move forward, there's going to be a lot of litigation in our future. And so if we're doing poor science, it'll be exposed in a court of law. So we have to make sure our science is ironclad, because it's going to be put to that test.
All right, John, and how would you respond to that, though? What questions are raised with you then?
Well, I would have to say this, that when I worked for the Crook Tribe, the Crook Community Development Corporation was specifically started to launder grant monies for the Department of Natural Resources and to provide a cushion against possible investigations into falsification of grant match funds, among other things. And I think that Craig is simply an activist. If he removes these four dams, he will have a huge future ahead of him with the Tide Foundation and other foundations that are currently funding his position through the BIA. And that's all I have to say today.
Okay, John, that's a pretty serious accusation. Craig, the Tides Foundation, what's that all about? I mean, is there any connection?
I have no idea. I don't get any grant money from the Tides Foundation.
Oh, and the Crook Tribe does not through various funding mechanisms. How about Steve Kendra?
Steve?
Who bred your butter, Steve?
You know, I'm a farmer. I raise crops.
Oh, a farmer.
I sell crops. The people that what I would call eat and work the land and everything. That's kind of who butters my bread is. I'm just kind of a blue collar guy out there plugging away and trying to make things better for my community.
Steve, yeah, with all the respect, you're involved in a lot of organizations, and you know, California Trout. You guys did some studies. Aren't you the founder of the Prosper Group?
Yeah, I'm one of those guys, and Prosper is made up of farmers and ranchers and. I'll call the tribal interests in the Klamath Basin trying to work together. That is true.
Okay, and then now, Prosper have some kind of a studies that was supporting dam removal?
We were part of a what I call. Let's find out what the questions are. People were asking, what does this really mean? What is the real economic impact? And we're curious about that too, because we're just like everybody else. If something is done, we want it to work. We want our investments to work. Then we want them to be practical. We looked at that, and we did that in partnerships with other folks.
Like Cal Trout.
I think that's what this is really all about, is who's working with who. And, you know, we're creating what I call some unusual, what I call partnerships and relationships. And it would appear that makes a lot of people out there uncomfortable. But that's how things are going to get done in the region, and that's how things are going to get done in the United States.
Let me just ask real quick, does this mean, you know, kind of part, I mean, this just feels like such, I'm just talking about a regular guy here, watching what's going on over the KBRA, and it sure looks like, you know, Agenda 21 kind of an attempt to rewild the whole, you know, basin to a certain extent, and certain politically well-connected folks are protected. And when I hear accusations of people where we're talking about Tides Foundation money might be going in here, George Soros-type connections and such, it raises some flags, though. You see what I'm getting at, Steve?
Well, I think a lot of that's fabricated. I don't know George Soros. I had never even heard of Agenda 21 until I read about it. I read about myself being an organizer for Agenda 21 on some blog. That's not what this is about. This is about Downriver Tribes, the Klamath Tribes of Oregon, Project Irrigators, have all been suing each other and fighting each other for decades, and no one was winning. Everyone was losing their economic opportunities. Mm-hmm. Everyone's culture was being affected. And so what people decided to do is say, hey, maybe the fighting ain't the way to do it. Maybe what we should do is sit down and see if we could reach some kind of compromise.
Well,
we did that. We spent 5 years doing it, and that's what we've produced.
The lawsuit is,
Hold on. I think, was that Craig or was that John?
That was John.
Craig.
That was me, John.
Okay, go ahead,
Let
John.
Let me just say, the only compromise the Crook Tribe wants is the elimination of the Shasta Nation and all farming and ranching within all tributaries of the Klamath Basin And there are some farmers out there that will do pretty well with this, because when it's all over, they will sell their water through a water district, probably managed by people from the Krug tribe or those interests behind the Krug tribe, and everybody else will be out of luck.
And that's a speculation. That's a groundless speculation.
They get to the bank.
No background.
To the bank,
or,
Craig.
Yeah, well, proof of what you just made this up.
There's no making it up, buddy.
Okay, now hold on, John. Craig, go ahead.
Well,
in the clear.
This is Steve. I mean, part of the accusation of what I call selling water, you know, water is a tool for me to what I would call raise crops and contribute to the huge economy that agriculture provides. And so there's no intent by this farmer or my community to sell. Now, there may be folks out there. I know that there was, I call, opposition to the restoration agreements, basically to what I call increase the potential marketing pool for marketing water after the Oregon adjudication.
So that I was mistaken. I'm sorry. So I was mistaken when the former past chairman of the Krug tribe told me that when the Krug tribe gets all the water, it will make billions of dollars off the water and be able to buy everything in Siskiyou County. He was mistaken when he said that to me?
If anybody ever said that, it was a ridiculous statement, because what you're talking about is not even economically or physically possible.
That's the hidden agenda, Craig, whether you know it or not. That's the hidden agenda.
Okay, well...
it must be hidden for me, too.
Okay.
You know that.
770-5633. John, I want to get to some other calls here. I'm going to put you back on hold in case we need to re-refer to you here. Morris, you had a question here. Steve Kandra, Craig Tucker, Gary Lake, they're all here today. Good morning.
Craig Tucker, is he the Krug tribe?
Yeah, he is the...
I was just wondering. Basically, this has been about the depth of salmon going up to the dam and dying, and their natural process is to die, lay their eggs and die. So do you really believe that removing the dam is going to keep these fish alive longer?
Well, it's not what we're trying to do is increase the productivity of the Klamath. And so one of the things that limit the number of fish we see in the Klamath River is access to spawning habitat. Historically, fish spawn above the dams. So
you make me feel like a mushroom here, like you're feeding me a bunch of mushroom food.
What?
The removing dams doesn't increase the lifespan of the fish, but it gives fish more areas to go, more areas to reproduce. It'll make more fish.
What about when the river goes dry traditionally, you know, during times of low rainfall?
Well, like I was saying earlier, the water storage in the Klamath is in Upper Klamath Lake, not behind these dams. So in severe drought conditions, the water behind the dams is not what makes there be flow in the river. It's the regulation, the outflow of Upper Klamath Lake. Upper Klamath Lake is orders of magnitude more water. So it's not true that the dams we want to remove control in-stream flows. That's controlled by the Bureau of Reclamation and Upper Klamath Lake.
Okay, yeah. Well,
this is all about fish, and I don't think that removing the dam is going to keep those fish alive or help them out.
Okay, well, yeah, we can go back to it, and we can't settle that right now, Morris. I appreciate the call. All right, 770-5633. Let me go to Lynn. Lynn is here. I don't know what's going on here. Let's try Lynn. Hello, Lynn. How you doing? Good morning.
Oh, I'm doing fine. I went to the event down in Wairika a couple of weeks ago, and the movie is now on YouTube, The Fight to Save Siskiyou County, and anybody wants to watch it.
But Craig and Steve, you guys are saying that Siskiyou's problems have nothing to do with what's going on in the basin?
Yeah, you hear that pregnant pause. You know what? My family's been farming in Siskiyou County for 100 years. And they've been irrigating. And we need to have what I call the water supply, the availability stabilized. And people talk about jeopardizing Siskiyou County. It's time for the folks in Siskiyou County to figure out how we're going to work with all the interests in the neighborhood.
Well, the one thing they did do, as you know, they voted against the removal of the dams, did they not?
70-some percent.
And I think that Klamath County also voted against this.
No, actually, Klamath County, there was an initiative 1880, basically the participation by the county government and irrigators was affirmed. Mm-hmm. So, no, that's not true in Klamath County. In Siskiyou County, the question was never asked, how do you provide water for Klamath Irrigation Project farmers? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with their power rates? How do you give them regulatory assurance? And the only question that was asked out there was, the dams more, do you take the dams in and out? Nobody ever asked, are the dams more important than the citizens of Siskiyou County?
So the way you're looking at it, they asked the wrong question.
Yes.
All right.
Well, that's an incomplete question because, we keep talking about the dams, but what we're trying to achieve with these agreements is more than dams. It's like selling these water disputes. It's making sure that Steve Kander's community has affordable power rates, can operate their irrigation infrastructure. It's about restoration, and it's about making sure Pacific Core's customers have the lowest possible power rates. It's about all those things.
It would seem to me the lowest possible power rate is to not be charging us more for our power right now and to just keep the dam as is. But
that's not what the Public Utility Commissions tell us.
The lawsuits.
The agencies that are in charge of regulating people's power rates tell us that if you get a new dam license, your power rates would be more than in the case of the settlement agreement with
Yes, and I have a feeling that PUC would make damn sure that would be the case, just my opinion on that. But hang on here just a second. I want to get to Daniel. Daniel, you are a member of the Karuk tribe, right?
Yeah, my name is Dan Effman. I'm a member of the Karuk tribe.
All right.
The main thing I'm concerned about is I know there's alternatives, and I don't think the tribe really looked at different alternatives to settle the dam issues rather than taking them out. If you take them out, the only people that are going to make anything, and this is the big problem that goes to the charter mandate, is billions and billions of dollars in restoration projects for the tribe and the rest of the environmentalists who are looking to get that money to do all these great projects, but it's going to go on forever and ever. And I know for a fact that there is other alternatives. And on the mining issue, just to go back on that for 1 minute, when I was at Department of Fish and Game, I asked Craig Tucker and Mr. Goodwin for any information telling me that mining and dredging hurt the fish, and they promised me the information and never produced it, and I requested it a couple times later, because I surely do not want to destroy our salmon population because it's a great resource for our people. And they never produced it, so that makes them a liar. And, you know, all this stuff is not about the dams, and it's about control over the people, which the Karuk tribe in the past has seemed to want to keep us suppressed and not let us have a voice. And hopefully with the new leadership, we'll be able to have a voice. And if they start listening to the people, they'll find out that the majority is not against the dredging, and they don't want the dams taken out.
So, Daniel, am I to understand that, and you as a member of the tribe, you're saying that there is a schism then, or a difference between what a majority of Karuk tribal members want and what the tribal leadership is doing? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yes, sir. Definitely.
All right. Now, Craig, that seems to be something that you need to weigh in on. And by the way, Daniel, thanks for the call, all right? Craig, go ahead. You can respond to that since you're involved with him right now.
Well, there's about 4,500 Karuks, so I don't think it should be shocking to anyone that there's not unanimous agreement on any single issue out there.
So, well, no one was claiming unanimous. What he was claiming was that a majority of the tribal members are not in agreement with what the leadership itself is doing.
Well, the majority people get to vote for their leadership, and the leadership has made these decisions over dams. And every time we have had a protest over these dams, whether they be in, we've gone as far as Scotland, because previously Pacific Core was owned by a Scottish multinational energy company. We've gone to Omaha, Nebraska, Portland, Sacramento, Wairika. Anytime we have a demonstration or protest over the dams, the crowd is full of Karuks.
Well, real quick, Craig.
This is Gary Lake, by the way.
Yes.
Trying to keep the players all straight here. And by the way, John is back on, too.
Okay. So when you talk about Dan Effman made a very, very valid point, and the bottom line is this: Happy Camp and Wairika and the various areas along the river that have a very substantial population of Karuk people, they still voted. 80% of those voters, even in those areas, voted against dam removal.
Well, I don't think anyone knows how many Karuks voted in that election or what their votes were. So you're speculating again without any factual data.
No, this is factual data. These are results that substantial communities.
That has nothing to do with what Karuk's want. If 80% of Siskiyou County vote one way, it doesn't really reflect.
I'm talking about in the polls, the areas that were that the votes happened in, that were a very large or very substantial population of Karuk people.
There
was still
80%. How many years ago?
This was just last year.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, why don't we talk about what the agreements do and don't do?
Yeah.
I think there's been a lot of finger pointing and saying this about individuals, but I want to talk about what the agreements do and don't do and challenge some of the what I call myths that are being perpetuated by folks like Lake that simply are not. Like in your show last week, I think the claim was made that water going to the Rogue River Valley from the Klamath would somehow be affected by these agreements. That's not true. That diversion is actually protected under these agreements.
Are you guaranteeing 100% that Southern Oregon's water will not be affected by the KBRA and the KHSA agreement? Are you giving a 100% guarantee?
This is Steve jumping in. Here's the issue. There is an adjudication going on.
It's a yes or no question.
You want an answer? You need to listen. There's an adjudication going on in the Klamath Basin, and the Rogue Diversion is part of that adjudication. That adjudication will occur. And in that adjudication, the times and rights, everything will be put in sequence and quantified. And that's taking place. What the restorations agreements do is give what I would call claimants in that adjudication an opportunity to negotiate with...
Oh, another negotiation.
That's what's going to happen, though.
Yeah, and it gives them an opportunity to negotiate outcomes. Conversely, we can litigate outcomes.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a guarantee to me, though, when I think of Talon Irrigation District, though, guys. When I hear about a negotiation coming down, you know?
They are where they are at because of what I would call their claim in time and right. And what you call it is certainty is they always have exposure to a call to a senior water right holder.
Mm-hmm.
The KBRA does not create that situation. Oregon law does.
What about the charter mandate?
Charter mandate. Explain to me.
Yeah, I don't...
Seems to me that I read some vague language with regards to a charter mandate that would be formed, that would basically oversee... water within the Klamath Basin, and if it's my understanding, it will supersede all city, county, and state governments?
Not true.
No.
And you're guaranteeing
we
that 100%?
We created advisory councils where stakeholders can... It's like what water managers like is when tribes and farmers agree on what to do, because then they're not put in a political pickle. That is not the case today. So what we've tried to create with the Klamath agreements is technical advisory councils where the advisory councils can make a recommendation and say, well, this is what we think works for the group, and make that recommendation to water managers.
All right.
But it doesn't supersede any existing statutory authorities of cities, states, counties, or anybody else.
All right. Now, I'm going to have to just put an end to it here. John, you're back on the line here. Did you have any closing thought here?
Well, ask the suction dredgers.
What?
Ask the dredgers who have lost all rights in California based on no real scientific data what they think about trusting the Karuk tribe or anybody who would be a stakeholder group with the Karuk tribe behind closed doors, and you'll get your answer to where this whole thing's going to go in the future.
All right, John, appreciate you calling there. Craig, I'll get you the final word on that. We got to get out of here, okay?
We're running out of time. I really appreciate you having us on the show. I think these kinds of debates are healthy. We think it's part of the process. And I hope people have learned more about these agreements and what they do and don't do.
All right. Like I said, I think we're just at the beginning of this, really. All right, Craig, we appreciate you being on here. Steve, thank you for your time also, okay?
You're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And, of course, Gary Lake, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. It's 8:57 on KMED. Be right back. There's a lot to chew on this morning, that's for sure. All right. I have got about a minute and a half before... We have to break for news here. So, Earl, quick comment there. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, you know, we have a dam and we have a river and we have a hatchery here in Jackson County. Mm-hmm. If they want fish, more fish, put in a hatchery, and there'll be more fish than there will be fishermen.
All right, thanks for that. It's not the right kind of fish, though. Hello, Tara. Good morning.
Good morning.
Quick one there. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so for those of you who don't want the settlement agreements to go through, what's your alternative to solving years of litigation, uncertainty, water supplies, and unaffordable power that's affecting farmers like Steve here in the Klamath Project?
Boy, he's spoken like a true leftist from the sounds of it, but I would say that it would be more litigation, probably.
And that's the solution?
I don't know if it's the solution. I'm just saying that's, you know, either you, you know, you agree to be broken in the leg, I guess, rather than hit in the head. I don't know. I don't know.
So I don't have an answer.
I'm not involved in this, other than just trying to get to the bottom of it.
Well, it's easier to break something down than build it up. And I think over the years of litigation or over the years of negotiation, you know, over 40 organizations have come together to build something up, and that's valid. And so when you have folks who are willing to tear something down and not give any alternative.
They have given alternatives, and they haven't been looked at. Remember the Karuk alternatives that were not looked at, according to the other guests?
What are the alternatives?
The alternatives that were to leave the dams there, but that's not being considered.
I'm not talking just about the dams. I'm talking about what are the solutions to giving 1,400 farm and ranch families water certainty, giving them affordable power, and giving them regulatory assurances.
I don't have an answer for you there, Tara. Thanks for the call. And Dave, you get the final word. Good morning.
Yeah. What about the dam right at Klamath Lake at the outlet? Is that going to be taken out?
Right.
I understand that was put in years ago by the power company to raise the level of the lake. If that's taken out, that means less water flows down the Klamath River.
Okay. I know that there are four dams that they are talking about taking out with the so-called plant at the moment. All right. I don't know if it's actually the one at the lake itself. Maybe someone can help me out there real quick. 902 KMED Medford. Tomorrow morning, we announce the winner of the big trip to see the Beach Boys over at Chinook Winds Casino out there on the coast this Saturday night. So I'll tell you what. Take as many callers as want to qualify right now. Brian hates me. But we've been so busy this morning, we just haven't had a chance to do it. Brad, you wanted to weigh in, help me out on what happened with the KBRA. We know there are four dams removed. Is the dam removed at the upper or at the Klamath Lake itself?
Yeah, that's the J.C. Boyle Dam up at the top of Klamath Lake. That's going to affect the level, you know, how many gallons are in that lake.
But it'll be natural.
I beg your pardon?
But it will be natural then, right?
Yeah, it'll be natural. It'll be a marsh in the summertime. If they think moving those dams is going to save the fish, it's crazy. And those dams have nothing to do with the fish. It has to do with the temperature of the water in the ocean. The fish are all going to Alaska.
All right. Thanks for the call, Brad. We appreciate your take on that. Have to run, Bill at BillMeyerShow.com. But once again, qualifying right now, 770-5633. Beach Boys at Chinook Winds Casino, overnight stay and hotel. And we'll announce the winner at the end of the show tomorrow.